You're listening to Play It Again, Swig. I'm Jocelyn Swigger, and I'm trying to learn all the Chopin etudes. I'm also trying to balance hanging out with my toddler, teaching full-time, and life's other distractions. This is my audio diary of that process. Well, it's Wednesday, December 7th, and I have to admit that I'm having trouble practicing consistently during the holidays. There are so many extra events, and they're fun, right? Like, it's not like I don't want to go hear my students play in concerts, and it's not like I don't want to go to these holiday parties, and even throw a couple myself. Like, yes, I want to do those things, and I really enjoy it, and it's a time of the year I like a lot. But it just means that there's almost never a day that is a quote-unquote typical schedule, and it seems like practicing is a thing that it's easiest to let go. So I need to be more aggressive about making sure that I have practice time. But since I am sort of just acknowledging or even trying to be at peace with the fact that I'm going to have less practice time than usual, I've mostly been doing what I call maintenance practice rather than getting better practice. So I've been doing a lot of playing through instead of the really intensive working on, you know, measure by measure, note by note, really figuring out the details. Instead, I've been mostly playing through just to make sure that these pieces don't leave me for these couple of weeks. So I don't feel like my pieces are particularly better to play for you this week. They're just more or less where they are. But I do want to tell you that I think I got somewhere with 25 number three. And here's how, actually. So I was playing 25 number three, and I was feeling really frustrated that the left arm felt awful. This is this one, which I've been complaining for a while, right? And it was actually feeling particularly awful because I had played a show with my band. I play accordion in a band. We played a show in D.C., which actually I want to tell you about in a minute. But anyway, so we played a show in D.C., and we had had a long rehearsal the night before. And although I've spent years and continue to work really hard on thinking and studying and understanding about how I can use my body really efficiently and effectively and non-painfully at the piano, boy, I sure don't know how to do that on the accordion. It's like my posture goes, everything goes, and I just don't know what the correct non-painful way to play the accordion is. I describe it sometimes as being like wearing a bra made out of a refrigerator. And I don't even have a huge accordion, actually. It's pretty small. But my left arm gets so tired from playing it. Anyway, so I had played this concert and had had a lot of rehearsal, and so had quite a few hours of accordion playing under my belt. And so my left arm was feeling sort of even more unhappy than usual. So I'm playing, and it felt awful. The first page usually feels fine, but this sort of starts getting uncomfortable. Anyway, so I did something that I should have done a long time ago, and then I'm going to do more, which is I went and I dragged my colleague and friend, who's the music education professor at Gettysburg College, I dragged him over and said, "Will you just listen to me and tell me what I'm doing with my left arm that's feeling so weird?" And he was able to tell me by watching from the left. It was great. He said, "It looks to me like you need to move your whole self about 4 inches to the right. And it looks like you need to open up your elbow on your left elbow so that you are doing the rotation with the elbow instead of having it always be right by your torso." And that helped a ton. I don't know if you're going to hear the difference at all, but let me sort of show you a little bit of that. So here's more to the left with my elbow in. I'm going to start sort of in the middle because that's where it gets awkward. Okay, so now I'm going to scoot over, and I'm going to open up my elbow on the left, and let me start in the same place. And it may not sound different, but it feels quite different, which is really important. Oh. That goes along with what I was talking about last week about putting my shoulders where they belong. But it was just really, really, really helpful to get an outside pair of eyes, even more than ears. It was actually an outside pair of eyes that I needed. So I think I need to remember that's really helpful, getting help from somebody else. I don't have to do this completely all by myself. You know, it's been months since I've had a lesson, and it's going to be a couple more months till I have another lesson just because of the way schedules are. So it's really, really, really great to remember that I have good eyes around me that can help me figure these things out. Anyway, so that's not where it is, and you'll notice that it's completely unmusical. There's no phrasing, there's no accents. One thing that you may have noticed, or if you didn't, I'll just sort of tell you, when I played this in the quote-unquote right way, I actually ended up missing a lot of the low notes because these distances now feel smaller, and I'm sort of used to them feeling really big and awkward. And so when they feel small, it almost feels like, oh, it can't be that easy. It must be harder. Do you know what I mean? So I'm sort of missing some of those. So I have to retrain and recalibrate those distances and those feelings in the left arm. But I feel like I know what to do with that now. And that's something that I can kind of do even though I'm in my maintenance practice, not being super careful in my practicing mode. It's something where I can kind of set my arm and think about my arm and play through a page or so. So I'm going to make sure that I'm really focusing on that over the next couple of weeks. I wanted to tell you a little bit about this show I played in DC. Not tell you a lot about it. It was fun. We filled up the place and people seemed to really enjoy it. But I had a minor, it's too small for an epiphany, like an epiphanette, which is that we're used to playing in bars. And of course, bar audiences are, shall we say, lubricated, right? They tend to sing along really joyfully. And we have one song in particular that really, really, really goes better when the audience sings along. Like it's just really exciting when the audience sings along. And it's very easy to sing along. So it's not like you have to have heard the song before. Like if you hear it once, by the end of the song, you can sing along. It's totally easy. And when we play in bars, partly it's because we have our home audience who knows our music. But we have a lot of people singing along, and it's this really sort of joyful anthem kind of feel. And in the coffee shop, people were sort of smiling and tapping their feet politely instead of singing along. And what that made me think about is that if you put a spectrum and on one side you have the bar audiences who are singing along and really happy and having this sort of feeling of togetherness, and then you move along the spectrum and you get to the coffee shop audience where people are sort of tapping their feet and nodding and smiling politely. Guess what's on the other side of that spectrum? The classical audience, which is sitting there and feeling like they can't tap their feet. They can't move their heads or their arms around. They're being completely quiet. So I'm not quite sure what to do with that. I certainly, sometimes when we're playing in bars, I wish that the audience would actually just listen to us the way classical audiences listen. But it's making me think that I need to think about maybe some venues that involve, I don't know, drinks, cocktails, wine. I mean, I certainly play concerts in my house where I have people come over and have wine and cheese and cookies and whatever. But that's not quite the same as a big crowd of people who are sort of having that feeling of togetherness. Anyway, so I guess the reason that's not a full-on epiphany is I don't quite know where to go with that, but it's just something that made me think, huh, I wonder about that. So I wonder about that. If you have opinions, I'd love to know what you think. Anyway, so I think that there's hope for 25.3. I really do. I'm carrying on with 25.5. Let me play this for you. Like I said, I've mostly been playing through this. I'm finding that memory is a thing that is completely not there yet. But maybe it'll be a little bit there today. Let's see. Thank you. Really, really, really sloppy. But I'm just going to keep on sort of playing it. I think I need to probably put it on the shelf pretty soon because it doesn't feel like it's getting very much better. But I do need to solidify the theory map that I basically sort of have in my head but haven't really, really sat down and said, okay, this is a one chord, this is a five chord. I need to really, really do that. 2511, I'm not going to play for you today. This one, I've just been playing through it. I'm not going to play for you today. I'm starting the harp etude, this one. So he literally writes big notes and small notes. And I really want it to be like this sort of smooth, perfect thread of the big notes over a cushion of the small notes so that you almost don't hear that they're notes, but it's just this beautiful cushion of sound. Obviously, I don't have that in there yet. Right now, it sounds really clunky and notey. One of the things I'm thinking about is where I put my shoulders. And I need to go through and sort of memorize this and make decisions about it, which I haven't done. I've mostly been just sort of playing through the first page, sometimes the first two pages. But that's starting to be on the horizon. And it's nice to play it a little bit. I have a student working on it, so I figured I better start working on it to keep pace with her. And then the other piece that I'm starting, I must confess that I have been sort of flirting with it, and I have decided I'm actually going to start it. Is the thirds, 25 number six. I played this in high school, but never performed it. But I did study it with Evelyn Broncar, so I have her fingerings for it. I also have fingerings from a new edition. Yes, I have another edition of this of these etudes. I have like five editions now. I got the Paul Badura Skoda Urtext edition of Opus 25, which has a lot of his fingerings in it. And some of them are pretty different from what McCooley and others say. For example, in actually just jumping back quickly to 25.3, in this part, with this thing, I had been thinking, oh, I'm just sort of going to deal with that later, which is why it often has sounded sort of smashy. He suggests doing 4-2-3-2. I was doing 3-2-3-2, and I think that's going to help a lot, actually. So I'm going to go through and use his fingerings for that particular spot. With 25 number 6, I can play like two bars of this pretty well. Here's a little bit that I can sort of play. Not bad, right? That's from high school. That's really all I can play. As soon as we get into things where it's coming down, it just gets really awkward. Anyway, I need to go through this one, and I need to make really super clear, absolute decisions about my fingerings. I think I probably will end up using Evelyn Broncar's fingerings for a lot of them. She has hands exactly my size, so I think that'll work for the most part. But I need to make sure that I decide about my fingerings instead of just sort of playing whatever happens. This is one of those pieces that's even more crucial than other pieces. The fingering can kind of make or break you in this piece. So what I'm going to do, even though I'm doing mostly maintenance practice, when I play this, I'm not going to let myself just play through the right hand. I am going to let myself play through the left hand a bit because I need to memorize it. And also, that kind of thing is pretty similar to this from 10-8. So hopefully, now that I've worked on that, this will be a little easier. Right? So I am going to play through the left hand. But in the right hand, what I'm going to do is choose a couple of bars and really, really make decisions about fingerings. so that I just am super clear about it, because I can just tell that if I learn some of the fingerings not quite right, then I'm going to have to unlearn them and it's going to drive me crazy. So I'm going to try and do this in a sane, non-crazy driving way. This is one of those pieces that people blanch about. Like it's a tricky one. So I'm not saying, oh, I can do it, it'll be totally fine. I think it's going to be really hard. But I'm hoping that if I approach it this sort of sanity-directed way, that it will work. Anyway, I think it'll be good to have these fingering suggestions from Badura Skoda, and I'll, of course, look at other Roncar's fingerings as well. And that is going to be my plan. So that's it. You can follow me on Twitter at Jocelyn Swigger. You can get in touch with me and ask questions or give me comments, which I would love, at playitagainswig.com. Thank you so much for being my practice buddy.